The headlines, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution announced a, quote, inflation control and growth in production as the slogan of the Iranian New Year. Iran condemns new sanctions imposed on the country by the UK and the European Union. And Russia's president tells his Chinese counterpart that Moscow is open to talks in the Ukraine crisis. Thank you for joining us. My name is Gisoon Shahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. The leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution says that the economy was the most important issue facing the nation in the previous Iranian calendar year. Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei made the remarks during his New Year's message. He said that there were both successes and setbacks with regards to the economic issues in the past year. Ayatollah Khamenei hailed the support for production, the increase in knowledge-based companies, and the fall in unemployment. The leader said that the entire world grappled with economic woes in the past year. Still, he expressed dissatisfaction with the rise in consumer prices in Iran, saying that the underprivileged sectors are bearing the brunt. Ayatollah Khamenei therefore declared the New Year's slogan as inflation control, growth in production. The Iranian president has also declared combating inflation and achieving sustainable economic growth as his administration's main goals in the year ahead. Ebrahim Raisi also recounted the achievements of his administration in the past year. Raisi said that the administration pursued, quote unquote, a balanced diplomacy, meaning that Iran did not wait on countries which were unsure about ties. He said Iran also followed a policy to revive regional and neighborly relations. The Iranian president said that the country enjoys a strategic and unrivaled position in the region, and the administration plans to tap into that capacity. Raisi also said that one of the features of the New World Order is the shift of power to the sprawling Asian continent, and the U.S. is seeing a decline in its role and hegemony in the world. People in Iran and several other countries are celebrating the Persian New Year, known as Nowruz. Iranian nationwide are marking the start of the blissful occasion with family gatherings. It is a period that children in particular look forward to because senior members of the family hand out money, which symbolizes prosperity and wealth. Many people have also gathered at a holy shrine to commemorate the event. The millennia-old Iranian tradition is also celebrated in Iraq, Afghanistan, Azerbaijan, Tajikistan, and several other countries. Nowruz marks the beginning of spring in the Northern Hemisphere. The United Nations has recognized the 21st of March as the International Day of Nowruz.
Sound the flute, now it's mute. Merry, merrily, merrily to welcome in the year. Those were the words of William Blake, but Iranian peoples have been literally doing so more than 3,000 years prior to that 18th century poem. Welcoming spring with Nowruz celebrations.
Nowruz is an ancient tradition. It literally means new day, and this is how we celebrate our new year, which begins on the first day of spring and usually falls on March 21st. Nowruz and the arrival of spring remind us that it is time for new beginnings and leaving behind our sorrows.
While many people start their New Year holidays a couple of days before Nowruz, the streets are jammed with last-minute shoppers. After all, no matter what the circumstances, you can't have a Nowruz without a half-seen table.
I personally prefer shopping for the half-seen table just a few hours before Nowruz. I suppose fun and games. Aside from the Nowruz shopping that I enjoy, I also love the hustle and bustle and the festive New Year's mood in the streets.
Iranians have their own special way of welcoming spring, and one of the most prominent of these traditions is setting the half-seen table, an arrangement of seven symbolic items that start with the sound S in Farsi, representing regrowth, health, and prosperity.
There are also other things we do to welcome spring, including a major spring cleaning of our homes, shopping for new clothes, and most importantly, visiting one another, short visits that are usually reciprocated.
The Nowruz festive events culminate in Sizdeh Bedar, the 13th day of the new year, which is also the last day of the Nowruz holidays. It is traditionally spent outdoors, picnicking and playing games. The holiday is also referred to as Nature Day.
Happy Nowruz, or as Iranians would say, we wish you a thousand years better than this year. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
And people in Afghanistan are marking the second Nowruz under the Taliban rule amid economic woes. They are welcoming the new year with the hope of positive changes and prosperity in the war-torn country. Rahmatullah Baqban reports.
Afghanistan has been celebrating Nowruz, the Persian New Year, for centuries. It is usually a colorful and joyous festival, welcoming spring and a new life. But the celebration has been dampened since the Taliban's takeover in 2021 and the subsequent economic hardships. Nowruz is no longer an official holiday in Afghanistan. However, the Taliban authorities say they won't prevent people from celebrating the festival.
Our country needs working days rather than a lot of holidays. Nowruz won't be celebrated by the Islamic Emirate, nor is it an official holiday. But we won't stop people from what they do on this day either. However, we will instruct them to act by Islamic law and our values.
Despite challenges, many Afghans are determined to keep their spirits high and enjoy the Nowruz festivities. They dress up in new clothes and visit their relatives and friends. Afghan families also prepare special dishes such as hafsin, samanak, and fish. Many others plant trees and flowers to signify growth and prosperity. All in all, Afghans hope for a better year ahead, one that brings peace and joy to their war-torn country.
Nowruz is our ancestral tradition. It has been passed down to us from generation to generation. Nowruz means a new beginning, and its message is that we should let go of the past and begin a new year with new resolutions.
Nowruz brings us joy and blessing. It's reflecting the rebirth of nature and renewal of sprites. I hope God blesses this year with peace and prosperity. We look forward to witnessing the end of instability and chaos in our country.
Afghan people say they still find joy and meaning in their traditions and culture. For them, Nowruz is more than just a festival. It's a way of life that celebrates your heritage and resilience. Nowruz is a time of joy and the promise of good days to come. Wishing you a happy and prosperous new year. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Iran's foreign minister has condemned the latest sanctions imposed on the Islamic Republic by the EU and the UK over alleged human rights violations. In a phone call with his Belgian counterpart, Hossein Amr Abdullahian said that Iran will give a proportionate response to the confrontational and sanctioned policies. The top Iranian diplomat said the European countries making accusations against Iran have themselves a documented history of human rights violations. He cited the violent approach of French police towards protesters as an example of such behavior. On Monday, the European Union imposed sanctions against eight Iranian individuals and one entity. The UK also imposed sanctions on several members of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. Western countries have already been accusing the Iranians of navy-handed response to recent riots in the country, a charge that Tehran denies. Head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations has visited Syria. He met the Syrian official and delivered a lecture on regional and inflammatory remarks. Our correspondent, Mohammed Ali, reports.
On Monday, head of Iran's Strategic Council on Foreign Relations, Kamal Karazi, met Syria's Foreign Minister Faisal al-Maqdad in Damascus and discussed regional and international developments, renewing Tehran's support for the Syrian people, army, and government. Karazi then delivered a lecture at Al-Assad Library. He said the Ukrainian conflict will lead to a new world order. He noted that the U.S. and its allies failed in their campaign to defeat Syria, asserting their intervention killed millions of people and spread extremism. Karazi said the West was willing to reconcile with President Assad if Syria had cut relations with Iran, hailing the joint policy of resistance between Damascus and Tehran.
The power of a country is expressed by its capabilities and steadfastness against pressures. This fact has been interpreted by the policy of resistance adopted by Iran and Syria across half of a century. This sparked hostilities from Israel and the West. The joint Syrian-Iranian experience proves that the main factor behind power is being able to resist international hegemony and confront arrogant world powers' greedy policies.
It's difficult today to find a state that shares similar policies with Syria. The common point that brings Syria and Iran together is supporting Palestine. Syria and Iran almost share identical viewpoints in all subjects.
Karazi clarified that the Iranian diplomacy is aimed at enhancing Iran's national security and defense capabilities. He stressed that Iran did not make the mistake made by regional countries of being reliant in their security on others. On the recent Iranian-Saudi talks, Karazi stressed that dialogue is capable of solving all problems without any foreign intervention.
Iran considers Saudi Arabia a big and influential country in the Islamic world. None of the two states should ignore the other. Both the states should use their capabilities to enhance regional security. Adopting cooperation and increasing dialogue instead of confrontation will end all crises without any foreign intervention.
The top official called for the withdrawal of illegal foreign troops from Syria. He expressed Iran's support to forming a strong government in Lebanon. He asserted that Israel's main goal is to destabilize the region, affirming Iran will continue to confront such efforts.
Iran's foreign policy has been a key boon to creation of balanced strategies to deal with regional challenges based on dialogue. Karazi reiterated during his visit that Syrian-Iranian relations have set an example of a successful alliance and resistance against U.S. and Western hegemony. Muhammad Ali, Damascus.
Chinese President Xi Jinping, who is in Moscow on a key visit, meets with his Russian counterpart Vladimir Putin. The two presidents discussed bilateral ties and the war in Ukraine during an informal speaking. Putin told Xi that Russia is open to discussing China's proposal for a ceasefire between Russia and the Ukraine crisis. Chinese president hailed what he called close ties between China and Russia. She also said that he was convinced that Putin enjoyed the Russian people's support ahead of the 2024 presidential election. Xi's visit to Moscow was seen as a show of support for Russia amid the war in Ukraine. China is high on the agenda of these talks with the Russian official. The Chinese president easier said Beijing's initiative is aimed at promoting political settlements in the Ukrainian region. Earlier, political analyst Fred Weir shared his views on either visit to Moscow.
It's pretty clear that Xi's visit here, is an expression of basically support. We don't know exactly what kind of agreements will come out of it. As for the idea of a peace plan for Ukraine, that's a thorny issue. That's a hard one. But it's possible, too, that there could be some progress on that. We'll have to wait until the meetings and agreements are signed tomorrow. Things like NATO expansion and the now, of course, the dismal relationship with the West and the United States in particular are driving Russia into China's arms. China also, although it had far less like incentive to kind of pair up with Russia, a symbiosis of Russia and China, you know, the huge of raw materials and energy powerhouse that is Russia, teaming up with the workshop that is China, could be an Eurasian colossus. That's the vision that some people express. That seems a little bit closer now than it did, say, a year ago.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
Nowruz is the message of peace and friendship by the Iranians for the whole world. Happy New Iranian Calendar Year! Happy Nowruz! IRIB English Radio wishes you a more than ever happy Nowruz.
In the limelight.
A new study shows that people in Britain skip meals to cope with soaring costs of food in the country. High inflation and energy bills continue to squeeze incomes in Britain. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted, as the cost of living crisis impacts British households, many are cutting down on food while living in cold homes, according to the latest findings from Consumer Insight Tracker. The monthly survey commissioned by the Food Standards Agency, FSA, revealed that 8.1% of households in Britain missed the housing, bill, loan or credit card payment in February. One in seven people, 15%, said they had skipped meals due to rising costs. Just over a quarter, 27%, said they had gone without some foods, up from 21% in November. Meanwhile, 9% had prioritized meals for other family members above themselves, and 4% had used a food bank. Nearly 60% of households reported making at least one adjustment to cover essential spending such as utility bills, housing costs, groceries, school supplies, and medicines in the last month. According to the report, adjustments include cutting back on essentials, dipping into savings, selling possessions, and borrowing.
Consumers have also been looking for ways to save on their energy bills, with 7 out of 10, 72%, saying they have turned down the heating due to spiraling costs, while 39% having used less hot water and 19% having had fewer cooked meals. The report said, while the majority of consumers have used the heating less due to price rises, this behavior will be more extreme in some households than others. While some say they may be able to save money on heating while still keeping their house sufficiently warm, others will not. 3 in 10, 29% of those who reportedly reduced their heating said they have often or always felt in physical discomfort this winter as a result. A further 4 in 10, 41% noted they have sometimes felt physical discomfort, while 29% have rarely or never felt that way. Data suggests that consumer confidence has recovered but remains low, with confidence in current household finances dropping slightly in February. 38% of consumers describe their financial situation as good, and nearly a quarter, 24%, as poor. Grocery prices in the UK have surged to a new record of 17.1% in the 4 weeks of February, according to the latest figures released by market researcher Kantar recently. Milk, eggs, and margarine are showing the fastest price growth, data shows. The report says food inflation in Britain is at its highest since the firm started tracking the figures in 2008, adding £811 to the typical annual shopping bill and forcing UK households to change their consumption habits. This February marks a full year since monthly grocery inflation climbed above 4%. This is having a big impact on people's lives. The head of retail and consumer insight at Kantar, Fraser McEvitt, said. The head of retail and consumer insight at Kantar, Fraser McEvitt, added, surging food prices were the second most important financial issue for the public in Britain after energy costs, adding that one in four shoppers in Britain were now struggling financially. Also, according to a British outlet study, some essentials have almost doubled in price over the past 2 years. For example, a 500-gram bag of pasta that cost £50 2 years ago is now priced at £95. UK families face an even tighter squeeze on their finances this year as the government cuts back support on household energy bills, while mortgage rates continue to rise, worsening the cost of living crisis. Although overall inflation in the UK fell to 10.1% in January from its highest levels in more than 40 years, food prices continue to rise, forcing shoppers to turn to discounters, the Economist said.
Food for thought.
Hello everyone, and since today is the last day of the Iranian calendar year 1401 solar Hijri year, which means tomorrow in the early hours of Tuesday morning at 54 minutes and 28 seconds past midnight Iran time, planet Earth will complete its yearly revolution around the sun. Let us present you a narration recorded by Allama Majlisi from the Holy Prophet's seventh infallible successor, Imam Musa Kazem, peace be upon him, who says, "In Nowruz, Allah made a covenant with his servants to worship him and not to allow any partner for him, to welcome his messengers and obey their rulings. This day is the first day that the fertile wind blew and the flowers on earth appeared. The archangel Gabriel appeared to the prophet, and it is the day that Abraham broke the idols. The day Prophet Muhammad held Imam Ali on his shoulders to destroy the idols the Quraysh had placed atop the symbolic house of God, the Kaaba."
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, looking for God's satisfaction. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Since we people live in the material world and deal with ordinary people, unconsciously we may pay less attention to the spiritual aspects of our life. This is despite the fact that a person must observe this general principle in his life, which is that the actions and behavior of him and all his good intentions should just be done for the sake of God Almighty and to no one else. For example, if I help a person, give money to a poor person, give someone a good advice, or even show affection and kindness to someone, I must be careful to do it just for the satisfaction of God. If a good action is done, but not for the sake of God, it will not last. If I help a person just to show him I am a good helper, or if I take others' hands to show them that I am a generous person, here I should know that people, soon or later, will forget about it, even though they may remember our benevolence for a couple of days, couple of weeks, but however, it will not last. Even if we refer to ourselves, we can understand that we also do not remember every kindness that we have received from others. Do we remember exactly the names of those who did a favor to us? Of course not. People's mind is not like a heart of a computer to always save the data that is copied in it. People are busy with their daily life and do not find it necessary to always remember the good things we have done to them or to always keep them in their memory. Welcome back. You are listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. I was talking about the fact that every good action should be done for the sake of God. If a good deed is done for Allah, Allah will never forget it. This is what we read in one of the Islamic supplications. وَأَعْمَالَ الْعَامِلِينَ لَلَيْكَ مَحْفُوظَةً. O Allah, the good actions of the good doers are preserved in your presence. Then why should a wise man just use up his energy to prove for ordinary people that he is generous, benevolent, merciful, and the like? If he always try to do something to attract people's attention, when later on we see that they have failed to remember it, or they are unable to recall it, we will become disappointed. But if I do every good thing I do for the sake of God, I am sure that Allah always remembers it, never forgets even the smallest goodness, and in the day of judgment, will show me the result of my good action and my good intention, and on that day will give me the result of it. Here I need to add that the reward that God gives to people in paradise will last forever. The blessing of the heaven is eternal. And as Allah says in the Quran, مَنْ جَاءَ بِالْحَسَنَةِ فَلَهُ عَشْرَ أَمْثَالَهَا, the one who brings with himself a good deed in the day of judgment, Allah will multiply it to 10 times. Other verses of the Quran also says that as much as a good deed is more important and more sincere, I mean, is done more sincerely for the sake of Allah, Allah will also multiply it more and more, even as the 271st verse of chapter Baqarah says, Allah will multiply it to 700 times. As a result, it is totally unwise to do a good thing just to be seen by people, the people who will forget it sooner or later, and not to pay attention that it should be done for the sake of Allah, who will never dismiss even the slightest of good things we do. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
What happened in Sirius?
Part 2.
Nowadays, the Silk Road is not what it used to be in the past, and much of it is destroyed or replaced. Of course, the Chinese, in cooperation with many other Asian countries, like Iran, intend to revive the Silk Road. This is a decision which is not secret, as they have talked about it openly on many occasions. Till then, the road linking Baghdad to Damascus, and from there to the Mediterranean coast, is still considered as the Silk Road. Now, the Americans have established bases in Tanf, right on the main Baghdad-Damascus road, cutting off the Silk Road, and their allied militants don't even allow anyone to enter the base's 35-mile radius. For this reason, when the Iraqis who were in pursuit of ISIS forces entered Syria at the Syrian government's request and unknowingly approached this area, US warplanes would attack them.
Yeah, I want to go back to the Tanf operation that took place yesterday. Could you confirm that the targeted Shia militias were Iranians or Hezbollah? And do you see any interest, any vital interest to the U.S. and the coalition to control the whole Syrian-Iraqi border?
Let me take a stab at this. At Ad-Tanf is what you're referring to, the force that moved near Ad-Tanf. Is that what you're referring to? That was, again, as the chairman pointed out, self-defense of our forces. It was necessitated, sir, by offensive movement with offensive capability of what we believe were Iranian directed forces. I don't know there were Iranians on the ground.
The U.S. Secretary of Defense had claimed that the Iraqis were encouraged by Iran to make an offensive move. The Iraqis paid a price for the move. U.S. airstrikes. That meant getting close to Tanf was treated as an attack on U.S. forces. Thus, U.S. aircraft droplets over the area, warning against approaching the base. That's the reason why American troops came here from more than 9,500 kilometers away. These are the same heroes that were given a warm send-off ceremony by the American people to protect their dignity and interests, and have come here as if they are defending U.S. borders. Although, in some way, they were right. Tanf is where the U.S. defends its undisputed dominance over the West. A good thing about Trump is that we don't need to try hard to prove many of our claims about the U.S. anymore.
People want economic freedom.
Iran's a different place.
Is it true that
Iran's no longer thinking about the Mediterranean and going through and...
Trump mentions Iran because he knows many people among Syria's armed opposition rely on the U.S. to counter Iran's regional influence. But it's obvious what Trump means is cutting off eastern economies from the Mediterranean. All right, we said all this to show that the war in Syria is not just about ideology and religion. That's just one reason among many. But before we switch to another puzzle, this question comes to mind. When did they exactly decide to wage a war on Syria? Let's listen to what Wesley Clark has to say. During those years, Clark was the commander of U.S. forces in NATO. He has also run for president several times.
I went through the Pentagon 10 days after 9/11. I couldn't stay away from Mother Army. I went back there to see Don Rumsfeld. I went downstairs. I was leaving the Pentagon, and an officer from the Joint Staff called me into his office and said, I want you to know, he said, sir, we're going to attack Iraq. And I said, why? He said, we don't know. He said, I said, well, did they tie Saddam to 9/11? He said, no. He said, but I guess it's they don't know what to do about terrorism. And so they think, but they can attack states, and they want to look strong. And so I walked out of there pretty upset. And then we attacked Afghanistan. I was pretty happy about that. We should have. And then I came back to the Pentagon about 6 weeks later. I saw the same officer. I said, why haven't we attacked Iraq? We still going to attack Iraq? He said, oh, sir. He says, it's worse than that. He said, he pulled up a piece of paper off his desk. He said, I just got this memo from the Secretary of Defense's office. It says we're going to attack and destroy the governments in seven countries in 5 years. We're going to start with Iraq, and then we're going to move to Syria, Lebanon, Libya, Somalia, Sudan, and Iran. I said, seven countries in 5 years. I said, is that a classified memo? He said, yes, sir. I said, well, don't show it to me. He was about to show it to me. He said, because I want to talk about it.
Wesley Clark is not the only person who believes the war in Syria was planned long before it started. Many others, like Robert F. Kennedy Jr., also share this belief. He is the nephew of the former President of the United States. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., who is both a lawyer and author, published an article in 2016 in Politico magazine entitled Why Arabs Don't Want Us in Syria. The article stunned many. He writes, in their view, our war against Bashar Assad did not begin with the peaceful civil protests of the Arab Spring in 2011. In their view, our war against Bashar Assad did not begin with the peaceful civil protests of the Arab Spring in 2011. Instead, it began in 2000, when Qatar proposed to construct a $10 billion, 1,500-kilometer pipeline through Saudi Arabia, Jordan, Syria, and Turkey. To see whether Kennedy's claims are true or false, we go back to the year 2000. As you are aware, Russia is the biggest producer and exporter of natural gas, with Europe being its biggest customer. The Russians export 70% of their produced natural gas to Europe. This means a steady source of income for the Russians. Russia has been using this as a tool to put pressure on Europe. For example, when European countries in 2009 sided with Ukraine in its price dispute with Russia's gas company Gazprom, the Russians turned off the gas taps in response. All this shows that the Europeans would want to disentangle themselves from this predicament, and the United States would also love to see such a huge source of revenue from its rival Russia. The US is highly motivated as it tries to find an alternative to Russia's gas. As a result, they have turned to Qatar and Azerbaijan for gas. But the fact is that Europe's demand for gas could not be met via sea only, and that such a huge supply could only be sent to the continent through a pipeline. This was where the notion of the Qatari gas pipeline was put forth. That's the same energy transit route that would pass through Saudi Arabia, Jordan, and Syria, and then reach Europe via Turkish terminals. Robert F. Kennedy Jr. writes, in Putin's view, the Qatar pipeline is a NATO plot to change the status quo, deprive Russia of its only foothold in the Middle East, strangle the Russian economy, and end Russian leverage in the European energy market.
With the spring, the season of renewal and freshness, and the greening of nature, we here at IRIB English Radio wish you happiness, prosperity, and good health.
New reports reveal that at least two private companies have received large grants from the U.S. military to develop online surveillance tools. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites for further details. Stay tuned for more. The conservative news outlet The Federalist reported
The U.S. Department of Defense funds private internet monitoring firms NewsGuard and PeakMetrics, which trawl the web for misinformation to censor and demonetize websites. NewsGuard is a private company that rates news outlets by their reliability and reputation for sharing falsehoods and misinformation narratives. Before a congressional hearing recently, journalist Matt Taibbi labeled the company a part of the censorship industrial complex, publishing an image of a $750,000 grant award from the Pentagon to the firm. During the hearing, reporter Michael Schellenberger explained that NewsGuard uses its rating system to drive advertiser revenue away from conservative sites or other disfavored publications. In an email to Taibbi, NewsGuard CEO Gordon Krowitz denied receiving government funding, stating instead that the government pays for access to its data. The Pentagon, he wrote, is specifically looking for evidence of Russian and Chinese disinformation. However, NewsGuard received a $25,000 award from the Pentagon in 2020 after winning the military's Countering COVID-19 Disinformation Challenge, The Federalist reported recently. A year later, NewsGuard was given $750,000 to develop an artificial intelligence-powered database of misinformation networks alongside the Department of Defense. NewsGuard is one of the several such businesses funded by the Pentagon. PeakMetrics was another winner of the COVID-19 challenge, earning a $25,000 grant to develop social listening technology for the military. It received a further $1.5 million from the federal government in 2021, but even before that, the company had been singled out as potentially useful to the Pentagon. In early 2020, PeakMetrics took part in the Air Force Accelerator Program, under which it developed measuring tools to detect misinformation campaigns. According to the Federalist, it put these tools to use during the 2020 and 2022 elections in the U.S. At that point, PeakMetrics solely worked for the U.S. State Department and Pentagon, before later offering its services to the private sector. It's unclear what the Pentagon aimed to achieve during these election monitoring campaigns. PeakMetrics did not respond to a request for comment by the Federalist. Aside from paying private companies to develop web surveillance tools, the Pentagon, along with a number of other government agencies and departments, has directly engaged in social media censorship in recent years. Internal communications from Twitter published by Taibbi, Schellenberger, and other journalists showed that the social media giant directly assisted the U.S. military's online influence campaigns and censored anti-Ukraine narratives on behalf of multiple intelligence agencies. The platform also received extensive lists of accounts to ban from the U.S. State Department and associated NGOs. Meanwhile, RT reported Nina Jankowicz, who briefly served as head of the Biden administration's Disinformation Governance Board, has launched a crowdfunding campaign to sue Fox News for portraying her as an unhinged partisan fascist. Ridiculed as a modern-day Ministry of Truth, the body was disbanded late August. Jankowicz launched her GoFundMe campaign and is asking the public for $100,000 to hold Fox News accountable for its lies. The conservative network, she said, broadcast baseless claims that the board was a nationwide Orwellian ministry of truth and I was President Biden's chief censor. Congressional Republicans and the right-wing media characterize me as an unhinged partisan, unserious, dangerous fascist, she continued, adding, and claiming that she resigned from the board last May due to this smear campaign. Jankowicz resigned one day after the board, which was under the jurisdiction of the Department of Homeland Security, DHS, was paused. Announced in late April, the board was instantly met with a wave of criticism, with conservative lawmakers and pundits viewing it a blatant attempt by the Biden administration to formalize the censorship of social media. Whistleblower documents provided to Republican senators last June showed that the board planned to coordinate efforts to leverage ties with social media platforms to enable the removal of user content. Personal attacks on Jankowicz focused on her own role in allegedly spreading partisan disinformation. She called the New York Post October 2020 scoop on Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop a Trump campaign product, and proposed that big tech platforms censor claims that COVID-19 leaked from a Chinese lab. The laptop has since been declared genuine by multiple investigations, and the lab leak theory has been given credence by the U.S. Department of Energy and the FBI. The board would have streamlined the administration's existing censorship missions, which, according to files released by Twitter CEO Elon Musk, involved intelligence agencies and U.S. State Department-funded entities. They also covered like-minded NGOs instructing Twitter's prior management to restrict critical content on COVID-19, the conflict in Ukraine, and racial justice protests, while banning accounts under the false pretext of them being linked to Russia, China, and other states. 4 months after it was first announced, the DHS permanently disbanded the board last August. However, leaked documents show that the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA, an agency within the DHS, is still engaged in combating so-called disinformation, including by instructing Facebook and Instagram to censor certain anti-establishment messages and narratives.
Hello everyone, and welcome back to another episode of The Subcontinent.
The Subcontinent.
Hello everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Subcontinent, a weekly show that aims to address the most significant issues in the South Asian region. And in today's episode, we'll be discussing two major issues: how the people of the South Asian region share a close cultural bond with Iranians, and the Nowruz celebrations across the subcontinent, symbolizing common traditional customs between the people. So, stay tuned.
In this special episode of The Subcontinent, we will discuss how the people of the subcontinent share a close cultural bond with the Iranians. And we shall also take a look at Nowruz celebrations across the subcontinent, symbolizing common traditional customs between the people.
India and Iran share a long and rich history of cultural exchange, which has left a deep mark on traditions, customs and practices of both the nations. The countries have a rich artistic and literary tradition that is deeply rooted in their shared cultural heritage. This connection between Iran and India made French thinker M. Grousset, while referring to the Taj Mahal, say that it is the soul of Iran that incarnates in the body of India.
The close relationship between the two regions dates back to ancient times when the two countries were connected by the Silk Road. The Mughal Empire, which ruled India from the 16th to the 19th century, also played a significant role in the spread of Persian culture in the subcontinent. The Mughals who spoke Persian adopted many aspects of Persian culture, including art, music, and literature. Persian miniature paintings, for instance, were widely popular in the Mughal courts, and many Indian artists were trained in this tradition. The Persian heritage also had a significant impact on the architecture. Many buildings and monuments built during the medieval period were designed by Persian architects and craftsmen.
Diwali has become a global festival, and in many parts of the world it is celebrated, especially in Iran and nearby countries and around the Black Sea region. And even the diaspora of these countries also celebrate. In total, more than 300 million people celebrate Nowruz all over the world. And this has become quite a significant festival around the world. And certainly its origin is said to be Iran, and that dates back 3,000 years.
Cuisine is another area where the impact of Iran on the Indian subcontinent is evident. Dishes such as polos and kebabs have Persian origins. Another similarity between the two regions is a common love for music, with Persian and Indian classical music having had a significant impact on each other. This shared cultural heritage has led to the exchange of religious traditions and festivals as well. The origins of Nowruz can be traced back to Asian Persia and the Zoroastrian religion, and it has evolved over time to incorporate elements from different cultures and traditions. Today, Nowruz is celebrated by people of various ethnic and religious backgrounds in India and around the subcontinent.
There are traces of this festival as like religious virtues. So there is no harm in it having like a touch of the religious aspirations or religious virtues to this festival, because it gives a little more flavor and respect to the day. And if it is celebrated as the first year of the year or the spring, or it is related to more cultural aspect and focused on it, certainly it would enhance and in its scope of a connectivity with the people.
Nowruz is a festival that marks the beginning of the Persian New Year and the arrival of spring. It's celebrated by millions of people worldwide, particularly in Iran and other parts of Central and Western Asia. In India, it's celebrated with enthusiasm by the Parsi community, who are the descendants of Iranian Zoroastrians. The celebration takes place on March 21st, which is the spring equinox. The festivity lasts for several days and involves a variety of activities.
The Parsi community in India marks the onset of spring with the celebration of Nowruz. The celebrations typically begin with a thorough cleaning of the homes, followed by the preparation of the haft-seen table, similar to that of the Iranians. This table is decorated with seven items that begin with the Persian letter seen, symbolizing different aspects of life. The items include sabze, or sprouts, which represent rebirth and growth, samanu, or sweet pudding, which symbolizes wealth and fertility, senjed, or Russian olive, represents love and wisdom, sib, or apple, is a symbol of beauty and health,
Serke symbolizes patience, somok represents life stimulation, and lastly, sir or garlic is a symbol of medicine. Other items that can be found on the half-seen table are candles, mirrors, goldfish, and coins. On the day of Nowruz, people dress up in their finest attire and visit their friends and family to exchange sweets. Nowruz is an important festival for the Parsi community and serves as a symbol of unity and renewal.
Iran has always been a very